Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week marks our 11th anniversary, and in celebration, I'll be talking with photographer Marco Rossi and writer Richard Campanella, creators of the book Above New Orleans, Roofscapes of the Crescent City. It is a special pleasure to welcome my next two guests to The Reading Life. Special because they've created one of the most beautiful books about New Orleans that you will ever see. The book is called Above New Orleans, and it celebrates the beautiful drone photography of Marco Rossi, with text by Richard Campanella. Marco Rossi is a native of Italy, a certified drone pilot who worked as a civil engineer before retiring to New Orleans in 2015. Richard Campanella is the Associate Dean for Research of the Tulane School of Architecture and the author of 11 books and more than 200 articles on the culture, geography, and architecture of our city. Marco, it's such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Susan. It's good to be here.
Rich, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Hello, Susan. Great to talk to you again.
Now, I love the story of your friendship. Marco, you began as a devoted reader of Rich's books, didn't you? So what was it about those books that helped you make the decision to move here?
They helped me see how much New Orleans had to offer. You know, since I moved around the world a whole lot during my working life, we never really put roots anywhere. And so when I retired, I found myself in the lucky situation of being able to choose where to live.
Mm-hmm.
And since our kids were all in the U.S. at the time, we decided fairly quickly that it would be in the U.S. And we also quickly converged on either New Orleans or San Francisco. You know, one could say we like the most European-looking cities in America.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But the final choice, you know, between New Orleans and San Francisco was a really tough one. And in Rich's book about New Orleans convinced me that the city had an extraordinary density of beauty, one could say.
That's a lovely way to put it.
Yeah, from the geography, the history, the culture, the architecture, you know, the people, the music, tradition, all the outdoor celebrations. So much to see and so much to do, and all packed into a, you know, a relatively compact, human-sized urban environment. So, yeah, Richard's book did have a decisive impact in bringing us here.
So tell me what it was like when Marco approached you and said he had read your books as part of deciding to move to New Orleans. What a compliment.
Yeah, that was very, very flattering and humbling. I guess I got an email from, I think it was about 2015, 2016, and he introduced himself and kind of knew me through my books and asked if he could sit in on my class. And he did a number of semesters, a number of different classes. My students love, I often get inquiries from folks in the neighborhoods to sit in my classes, and, you know, they bring insights that the much younger people in the class don't necessarily have, and it's wonderful. So we got to know each other, and all the while, Marco was honing this interest in photography, which he had had all his life. And then he picked up drone photography and became very skilled at flying it and capturing photos. So he's also got he's got a great photographic eye, and he's got a bit of a whimsy and a little bit of mischief in his eye that makes for great photography. So all along, I kind of told him, as well as other people, so, you know, Marco, you ought to do a book. Fast forward, July 2020, in the heart of the first or second wave of COVID, he sets up a meeting with me, and he wants to discuss the idea further. And out of that one-hour meeting, we agreed to collaborate. And he would, it was one of those, you know, in academia, we talk a lot about collaborations, interdisciplinary collaborations. This was at its best.
I can imagine.
What he brought to the table, I could not do, and what I brought to the table, the historical geography, he wasn't necessarily up to speed on. And so it was one of those cases where the two pieces came together and created something greater than the sum of its parts.
Well, Rich, you're someone who's looked at New Orleans long and hard. I mean, past and present New Orleans. And you've done a lot of work in looking at photographs. I mean, I think of New Orleans then and now, of course. So talk about what this kind of photography offers the viewer like me who looks at this book, besides moments of incredible joy.
I mean. Well, in the subtitle, originally it was supposed to be the title, but in the subtitle is this word roofscapes. And roofscapes is, it's not my coinage. Others have used the term, but it's not really in circulation that much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a word that I've loved. To me, a roofscape is an oblique perspective, okay, that is high enough to be synoptical and yet low enough to be intimate. And so just imagine a bird or, you know, just right above a church steeple where you're looking at a sharp oblique angle into the tout ensemble, the total impression of a crowded, dense, exciting historical city. If you're too far up, it becomes abstracted. If you're too far down, you might as well call it a cityscape, and you're at grade level. But when you're just at that angle, you could almost look into windows, and you see this perspective that reveals the most magical thing you could ever find in a subject, and that is a sense of mystery.
I'm curious, because I'm not a photographer myself, so I really would like you to talk about what it looks like when you're piloting a drone and taking pictures at the same time. It seems like you have so many things you have to take into consideration, like the range of the drone, the height, the perspective, the weather, so many variables.
Yeah. It does require some skills in both piloting and photography, but especially a lot of concentration. Definitely not something you'd want to do after a couple of glasses of wine. but it's actually simpler than it may seem. So the key is to plan, like in everything in life. For example, in this case, you need to choose the times when the weather is safe for flying. And of course, when there is a light that is interesting for shooting photographs, which is usually, you know, near dawn or sunset.
Right.
I always pick sunset because I don't sleep. But then there are the FAA regulations that kind of box you in. You know, they're fairly strict and pretty much define how high can you go, how far can you go. So you're a little bit in a box in terms of selecting where to go. Now, once the drone is up in the air, it all comes down to finding an interesting subject, you know, a pleasing composition. And those are the usual challenges faced by every photographer. You know, regardless of whether the camera is in your hands or on a tripod or in the sky. The very first time that my camera took off, you know, with the drone, I immediately realized that New Orleans was just as beautiful from the air as it is from the ground. And drone photography became instantly just as fun for me as the regular photography.
So what is it about this aerial view that appeals to you? I mean, to me, it seems to put our humanity into such perspective. I mean, it makes everything look so close together. You know, it makes it look like we're surrounded by nature as we are and how fragile our existence is here. So what are some of the things you think about that you see in your own pictures?
Yeah, I think you put it very well, Susan. Seeing a city from the sky gives you the proverbial, you know, 30,000 foot view, and even though it's only 400 feet,
mm-hmm.
and it gives you the you know, this so-called big picture, and you notice things that can be missed from the ground. Also, at ground level, we are more personally involved in things, I would say, less detached, at least I am. In the air, the daily issues and problems seem to fade away. You know, also in this pandemic time, flying a drone is also a good way to visit places for distancing.
Yeah. Right, safe.
You can hear.
If you're just joining us, my guests are photographer Marco Razzi and writer Richard Campanella, creators of the book Above New Orleans, Roofscapes of the Crescent City. We'll be right back. So talk about putting this collection of photographs together.
Well, Marco being an engineer and myself being kind of an analytical geographer, we came up with a methodology. So he amassed all of his drone photos. There were hundreds and hundreds of them. And he gave me a set of them and kept one for himself. And we went through and graded them on an ABC scale, based on what we loved and our sort of aesthetic instincts, as well as an eye towards spatial coverage. And then we compared them, we reconciled them. There was a general correlation, though there were some A's that were the other guy's C's and the C's that were the other guy's A's. I certainly conceded a level of artistic license to Marco, he being the photographer, and it all worked out.
But so wait, tell me, were you looking at actual physical photographs, or were you looking at them on a screen, or how did this work?
All digital, although we got to a point when we did the final down select that I printed out 11 by 17, just to see what visual impact they produce as a physical product.
Yeah.
And we did the final down select there. We also did what I think of as a gap analysis. We're trying to cover the whole metropolis. Now, granted, you know, you can't cover everything evenly. The French Quarter, the downtown, they're going to get a lot of coverage. They have the older streetscapes, roofscapes. But we didn't want to leave a gigantic gap. So we did a gap analysis. We found some areas that were missing. And so Marco went out and captured those. And so it all came together.
So talk about the arrangement, because you really do take the viewer on a journey in this book.
Yeah. That was another big decision. How do you chapter? And, you know, one of the arguments that I make in my broader writings on urban geography is that, you know, when you look at that god-awful official map of 73 official city neighborhoods, which I'm a big critic of, they look like these little discrete puzzle pieces with hard borders, and they're all about perimeters and edges and nothing about the nucleus. And I view everything I know about urban geography and human geography says that's not the way cities work, and that's not how people perceive cities. What they perceive is interwovenness. They don't perceive Canal Street being a barrier. They see it as a unifier. And so with that spirit, we decided not to artificially section the book, French Quarter, Gray, Uptown, with a hard barrier, as if there were these puzzle pieces. And so we kind of collectively devised that, almost like a drone or a bird circling outwardly from the inner core to the suburban periphery. There are a couple of jumps, you have to, but for the most part, it's a smooth, organic flow.
It does flow that way. It's really beautiful. Yeah. So, Marco, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about are the things that keep popping up in your photographs, which as a viewer, you know, I really love, because you love to look at pictures and go, ah, there's another one, you know. What is it about steeples of churches that attracts you so much?
They're high, and you can see them from the ground very well. And when you're up there with the drone, you can see them while seeing all the surrounding things. You know, in general, my favorite photographs are those that capture a unique moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
Those that freeze on the frame an instant that otherwise would have been lost. And there are quite a few of them in the book. And one of them is actually a bird. There's a hawk that flies away from the cross of a on top of a church in St. Charles. Mm-hmm. That had both the bird and the church people. That was a lot of waiting for that hawk to take off and take a picture of it in flight. You know, I love it when people casting a shadow on the grass, like captured a few photographs of that in a city park, because near sunset, the shadows are so picturesque. You can see a storm that breaks over the Mississippi in front of the French Quarter. Another picture that I really like, and also, you know, has to do with seeing it from an angle that is not possible from the ground, is there's this child that's flying a kite across the park.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And you can imagine how many steps it took. The kite was flapping around the wind, and the little one to get the kite in the foreground and get that perspective where you see the kite next to the camera and the line that goes all the way down to the kid that is down there on the wharf.
Now, there's something about this book. I mean, you can say that Rich Campanella's writing has a poetic perspective, but the beauty of the photographs is a poetic perspective as well. And I felt it so strongly in your photos of Bayou Bienvenue. And I wondered, because those are near the end of the book, I wonder if you talk a little bit about those photos and what they show.
Yeah, those are also that type of pictures that I like. They're, you know, moments that you capture that are ephemeral and would probably never exactly be like that again. In particular, there's a picture that's on page 224. It was sometime early in 2020, January, February, and I was out and about looking for something beautiful to capture. Sometimes I haven't read yet. But I noticed that the sky had some spectacular clouds, especially in the west. You know, those clouds that occupied the entire sky and kind of looked like the scaly skin on a fish. I guess they're called cumulus or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I knew we might have a sunset sky on that day, so I went to the wetlands triangle by Bayou Bienvenue, where on low wind days like this, the water becomes almost like a mirror. And I was rewarded by the photograph that you see, where there are almost two skies. One is on top and one is reflected in the water. And I used the widest angle that the drone camera has so that the skyline looks tiny in the distance, because I wanted to stress size of the nature and the colors that surrounded our city. And Bayou Bienvenue is almost like, nature in town. It's
it is
close enough that you can get there in a few minutes by car, and it's far enough that it looks like a different world with the birds on top of dead cypress trees and fish jumping, alligators, got it all.
It's just this great cauldron of life, but we see how the city is surrounded by water. And I wonder if you talk a little bit about that photograph, as Marco has.
Bayou Bienvenue was the gigantic swamp basin. Everything east of the Esplanade Ridge, south of the Gentilly Ridge, and north of the natural levee of the Mississippi River in what is now Bywater, Lower Ninth Ward. So think of this as this gigantic swamp basin that rainwater flowed into, and a meandering bayou drained eastward out to Lake Bourne. 200, 300 years ago, we have degraded that swamp basin in every way possible. We also built a beautiful city to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And that degradation entailed chopping it up into subholders, draining it, starving it of water. And there's a little bit of a remnant in the rear of the Lower Ninth Ward, as well as Araby and Chalmette, and the original channel is still discernible of Bayou Bienvenue itself. And that brings us to this particular photograph. There's a number of them. You see the skyline in the background, a spectacular sunset, and this beautiful wetland in the foreground. And when I say beautiful, that's the enigmatic part of it that led me to write this particular caption. When you think about other degraded ecosystems, they're oftentimes ugly. If you look at a clear cut in the Rocky Mountains or a quarry or a polluted bay or other degraded environments, they look degraded. But the paradoxical thing, and how often do we use that the word paradox to describe the city and region, about a degraded wetland, is that it continues to be beautiful. And if you kind of compartmentalize what you see before you, your eyes, is perfectly spectacular, and there's wildlife. What you may not see is that, as I'm seeing when I look at this photo, even as we speak, is that it used to be this full canopy cypress swamp, and now it's a salinated, degraded wetland. And so that kind of inspired the caption that I wrote for this, which plays with the notion of an integral ecosystem and a troubled one being almost analogous to the way we occupy the city.
What have you learned from these photographs yourself? Because you're always looking at the city from a different angle. People always learn something from the way you approach the city.
Well, that's just it. There are angles here that have never been seen before. A drone is a very interesting perch for a sensor. It could get close to things that any other previous perch that could bear a camera could never do. You couldn't take a helicopter hovering 20 feet from the top of St. Louis Cathedral. You could not get these incredible nadir views of Jackson Square. And so it's giving me an eyeball in the sky on a cityscape or a roofscape that just has never been seen by human eyes, much less captured by an instrument before. Another angle that, I mean, I could give you, there's one nadir, well, when I say nadir view, that means a photo taken straight down at a 90-degree angle as opposed to an oblique, which is any other angle. Mm-hmm. There's a nadir view on the cover of Jackson Square, which is absolutely splendid. And if you look closely, there's a very historical timestamp there. You don't see anyone in Jackson Square.
Right.
What era do you think that is? It's early COVID.
Oh, Rich.
Yeah. It's
oh,
late,
my gosh.
Late March 2020 when we were full stop, remember? And those who were able to just walk around in the quarter saw just empty streetscapes. I'll never forget, I went for a walk with my family, and there was one person drumming at Jackson Square, and you could just close your eyes and be swept back 300 years. And on that note, there's a nadir view of Congo Square, and when you're at Congo Square, it's so rich with a sense of history there, and you look down and see those stones. When you're above Congo Square, you could see that the stone pattern of the treatment forms this perfect nautilus.
Yes.
This perfect spiraling nautilus, completely invisible from the ground, but so strike, and if you're too far up in the sky, you don't see it. But if you're at this roofscape level, it's astounding.
Well, it's just an amazing book. We've been talking with Marco Rossi and Rich Campanella, creators of Above New Orleans, which will forever change the way you see our city. Marco, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. It was a pleasure being here.
Rich, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Susan, and thank you so much.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. In New Orleans, Johnette Downing celebrates the release of her new board book, Five Little Possums, Saturday, November 27th from 2 to 3:30 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. The Garden District Bookshop and the Churchill Society of New Orleans host British author Anthony Tucker Jones for reception and book signing of his latest work, Churchill, Master and Commander. That's Monday, November 29th at 6 p.m. The event will take place in a private home and is open to members and non-society members alike. proof of vaccination or a negative PCR or rapid test result within 72 hours is required for entry. Tickets and info at GardenDistrictBookshop.com. Dr. Stephen Hales appears with Walter Isaacson to discuss and sign their new book, Rex, 150 Years of the School of Design, Thursday, November 30th, starting at 5 at Garden District Bookshop. This is a ticketed event. Best-selling author Brené Brown debuts her new book, Atlas of the Heart, Mapping Meaningful Connection in the Language of Human Experience, in a virtual presentation Thursday, December 2nd at 7. Tickets available at GardenDistrictBookshop.com. Maryar Amuzegar reads from his fourth book of fiction, The Hubris of an Empty Hand. That's Saturday, December 4th at 6 at Octavia Books. This event includes a talk about and celebration of Yalda, a 2,000-year-old Iranian winter solstice. The Last Poetry Buffet of 2021, curated by Gina Ferrara, takes place Saturday, December 4th at 2 via Zoom. Come read a favorite poem you have written or one you have read during 2021. Get the Zoom link from the Poetry Buffet Facebook page. Brian Altobello signs Whiskey, Women, and War, How the Great War Shaped Jim Crow New Orleans, Thursday, December 9th at 6 at Octavia Books. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellas Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.